School Leadership Podcast from NAHT Edge and NAHT.
Hello and welcome to a very special episode of the School Leadership Podcast, brought to you this month in partnership with Ambition School Leadership. In this episode, we focus on the crucial role middle leaders play in school improvement. We hear from a panel of middle leaders who reflect on what they most enjoy about their role, the challenges they face, and what advice they would offer to others. We also have an interview with a leading thinker on school leadership, Andy Buck, who offers his advice on how middle leaders can make a real difference in their school.
This is the School Leadership Podcast.
Ambition School Leadership, formerly the Future Leaders Trust and Teaching Leaders, is transforming the lives of children in disadvantaged areas by building a network of exceptional school leaders at all levels. Our leadership development programs help ambitious school leaders have a greater long-term impact in their role. More information about our programs and our free leadership diagnostic tool can be found on our website, www.ambitionschoolleadership.org.uk. Andy Buck is a former National Leader of Education and Director at the National College for School Leadership. He's the author of Leadership Matters and the Chair of the Education Committee of Ambition School Leadership. We caught up with Andy at the headquarters of Ambition School Leadership and started by asking what he sees as the core role of middle leaders and whether this differs between primary and secondary schools.
So I think the core purpose of it probably doesn't, which I think for me is the core role is about, you know, if you had to boil it down to one thing, it is how do you get the best out of the people you're working with so that they can get the best out of the children that you serve. And, you know, I don't think that, I don't think there's anything different there from primary or secondary phase. That's the job, really. And, you know, we could talk more about the detail of what that looks like. We probably will. But I do think there's a difference. I think, if I'm completely honest, some bits of secondary are more challenging in that, you know, potentially the sort of situation you might find yourself working in, some of the challenges with the children you're working with as they become young adults and so on. We all know what that looks like. But if I had to choose, I'd say probably it's harder to be a primary middle leader than it is a secondary. And the simple reason for saying that is that most primary middle leaders don't line manage the people who they need or who they're trying to bring out the best in. So let's say, for example, you're responsible for literacy across a phase or a school, depending on the size of the organisation. Most of the people who you need to deliver really good literacy with the children, you probably don't line manage. And those teachers who you need to see delivering great literacy have got other people wanting them to do great numeracy, or geography, or history, or PE, pastoral care. You know, so you're competing much more for the attention, I guess, of the staff who you need to deliver for you, where in secondary, if you're in a curriculum role, chances are you're the line manager of the people in your department or your faculty. That's harder for heads of year, of course, because for heads of year, they've got that same problem that most primary leaders have. But that's probably the biggest difference, and I think that's probably why it's a little bit harder to be a primary middle leader than it is a secondary.
So do you think it requires a different set of skills, almost, or is there overlap there?
So again, there's overlap, I think. I mean, I think that if you can get people doing stuff because they want to do it rather than because they have to, that's a good thing. And that applies to both roles. But I guess you have to be particularly skillful in influencing and getting people's buy-in if someone that you're wanting to do something really well, you don't line manage because you don't have the ability to exert the carrot and stick in quite the same way. But for me, getting intrinsic reward for people, which doesn't involve carrot and stick clearly, is a better way forward anyway in terms of people's discretionary effort, whereas, you know, a secondary leader might have the benefit of the extrinsic reward of the carrot and stick that comes through line management and appraisal. I think they ultimately should be aiming to build that intrinsic desire for people to want to do it because it's the right thing to do for the children that they're working and serving.
And we're seeing lots of new school structures emerging now, obviously in the era of MATS, for example. I wonder if you think, is the role of the middle leader changing as school structures change?
So I think the fundamental role is the same. Depending on how you want to look at it, you're either between the devil and the deep blue sea, if you're looking at it through a glass half empty, which is that, you know, you've kind of got the senior team making demands of you, and then you've got your team that you're leading equally sometimes demanding, and you've got to try and make sense of that position where you're caught in the middle. Alternatively, you could see it as, do you know what, I'm at the heart of the school and I'm in the place where I can make the biggest difference. And that's a mindset for me. I'd like to think that, you know, Ambition School Leadership with our Teaching Leaders program, you know, we're all about saying you're at the heart of school where you can make the biggest difference. And, you know, one of the things that research shows is that the people can have the biggest effect on teachers' discretionary effort is their line manager and the person who, in a way, they're working to. Well, that's middle leaders. It's not always senior. It usually isn't senior leadership, except in very small primary schools, I guess. So I think from that point of view, it's the same. But, I mean, the things that I observe in the work that, you know, I do in Ambition School Leadership and across the board is, number one, accountability is growing. Hopefully, we're at a point where people are realising you can go too far with this. I suspect we probably just need to row back slightly from where we've got to with accountability, because if people feel like they're living in fear all the time or that the fun has gone out of the job, either they're not going to stay, and clearly we're seeing big numbers at the moment leaving the profession, or they're just not going to enjoy it as much. And if the people aren't enjoying their work, they're not as good, let's be honest. So I think accountability has probably changing a bit. I also think in certain circumstances, autonomy may be a little bit less than we perhaps used to. You know, people used to be king or queen of their own kingdom a little bit in the old days with middle leadership. Now that, you know, there are stronger whole school policies around not just curriculum but pedagogy, that maybe there's a holding to account around. And actually, of course, we're starting to see with the growth of multi-academy trusts where sometimes those curriculum and pedagogical requirements are kind of going across groups of schools, even not just within a single school. So the scope for middle leaders to be autonomous and make their own decisions maybe is reduced a little bit, and I think that's something else we've got to keep an eye on. The other thing, which I think is a great opportunity, is that we're starting, I think, although, like, you know, I think this is probably still in its earliest stages, but we're starting within groups of schools, particularly multi-academy trusts, to see leaders, middle leaders, working across more than one school, or indeed working within their school to act as a mentor for new middle leaders coming into role. And I think that's very exciting. It's particularly useful for people who are thinking about moving on to senior leadership, because it gives them a chance just to, if you like, get buy-in from others and exert some positive influence on other professionals on a broader canvas, which of course is what senior leadership is all about, really.
And you work with middle leaders up and down the country. I'm really interested to ask you whether or not, are there some common characteristics that you've identified in terms of effective middle leaders? You know, what are those things that middle leaders do that make a real difference in their schools? Yeah.
So we could talk about their own sort of personal, if you like, self-belief, and self-awareness, some of the characteristics, the resilience, you know, the moral purpose to want to do the best thing for the pupils and so on, and being imaginative and creative and systematic and so on. But to answer your question specifically, if we're thinking about what do they actually do that makes the biggest difference, I don't think you can go far wrong if you think about Steve Radcliffe's fantastically simple but insightful model, where he talks about basically all leaders in any job do three things. One, they work out what their vision is, where they want to go, to use his phrase, what they want to get up to with the staff and the pupils that they're working with. So that sense of future, as he calls it. Secondly, this is about them leading. This isn't about them doing everything, which is always a temptation, you know, because as a leader, and particularly in middle leadership, it's probably always quicker and easier for you to do something yourself, and you'll probably do it better than the people you might delegate to, at least in the early stages. So I think that His idea that the second thing you need to do is to get people bought into what you're trying to achieve, get them excited about it, get them trained up, get them feeling like they can do it, give them the resource to make sure they can achieve what you want to achieve. In other words, what he describes, get them really, really engaged and motivated and, if you like, ready to go with what you want to achieve. And that will then lead to the third thing that I think great middle leaders really focus on, which is really strong delivery. Really making sure that it's not all just fine words, but that it translates into really good action. And I think that's a very powerful combination, that FED, future, engage, deliver, I think is what the best school leaders do. And they don't forget any one of those three critical elements.
And I want to focus now on perhaps some of the challenges that middle leaders face in their role. When I speak to middle leaders, I know one of the things that comes up again and again is that challenge of managing, should we say, difficult members of staff or staff who that you're finding it hard to get them to change in the way you'd like them to. Do you have any kind of advice that we could offer middle leaders who are wrestling with that issue?
Yeah, so we have a whole session on this in the Teaching Leaders programme, actually, because you're absolutely right. And by the way, it doesn't stop with middle leadership, does it? As you know, at headship, it's just the same. But again, I think these conversations are more difficult for middle leaders than they are for senior leaders, partly because the people you're working with that you might want to have these conversations with, you work pretty closely with. And this is potentially where it's harder if you're working in a secondary context, because it's a team where you're literally in the same space the whole time, or in a very small primary school, or if you're running a phase in primary, I guess. But I draw a lot on the work of someone who's done some fantastic work in thinking about this called Susan Scott. She's written a book called Fierce Conversations. A few of the things that she talks about, number one, you just have to pluck up the courage to have these conversations. And that's almost the most difficult thing. You know, you've probably tried what I would call nudge conversations, dropping it in, making light of it, bit of humour, and those are easier conversations. But this is the next stage. And it's probably the hardest. I mean, I might even argue that they're really at the other end of the continuum, where you're kind of maybe saying goodbye to a member of staff because it's just not working out. Actually, they're easier than these because, you know, the person doesn't turn up the next day usually, and you know it's the right thing to do for your pupils. It's the ones in the middle that are the hardest, and those are the ones that middle leaders often find themselves needing to have. So having the courage to have them, not hiding behind someone or something else, I think is really important. You know, saying, for example, well, Ofsted would expect us to, or the head has asked me to talk to you about, or I've had some feedback from so-and-so. No, this is all about what you think is the right thing to do and what you've observed that isn't quite right, and being absolutely upfront about that. I guess it's about having the conversations in the right time and the right place. And the final thing I'd say about this is, well, two things really. One is, make sure that at the beginning of this conversation, you have an opening 60 seconds or so where you absolutely set out your stall unequivocally, and at the end of it you stop and you say, what do you think about what I've just said? And let what Susan Scott says, let the silence do the heavy lifting. And what you're on the lookout for there is the person accepting this feedback or not? And if they're not accepting it, don't fall into the trap of trying to help them solve the problem, because they'll just be paying you lip service. Go back and keep going, or stop the meeting and say, look, we don't appear to be moving on with this. Let's talk again tomorrow, and give them some chance to kind of reflect on it. And if all of that fails, then you have to go and talk to someone more senior and say, look, I'm just getting nowhere with this. I need your support.
And I guess the other thing is we tend to see these kind of conversations almost through a negative prism. But I guess also there's a potential they can unlock excellence, can't they? They can be the moment where you unlock excellence in teachers, going back to that first point about bringing the best out in your team.
Absolutely right. And, you know, I grew to love having these conversations, not because I liked being hard on people, but because I could see the difference they made. Now, you know, with a small percentage of these, it doesn't work out and the thing, you know, it runs its course, shall we say. But in many, many cases, actually both of you can have a sense of relief. You've probably both been skirting around the issue, and to have it out in the open, and then to, you know, once there's an acknowledgement that something needs to change, well, then you can really make a difference. And I've seen these conversations be the absolute trigger for transforming a teacher's practice, and therefore, you know, what pupils are achieving.
And of course, the other big challenge you hear time and time again is time. It's that I'm trying to manage being a classroom teacher plus my leadership responsibilities. There's just not enough hours in the day. Yeah. What kind of advice can you offer to middle leaders who are having that issue?
So the model I kind of use, and I have a model in my head actually as I'm answering this question, is a really old one. It's been around for 30, 40 years, by someone called Amit Varma. And basically what he says is, when you've got that massive list of to-do things, he says, why don't you just plot them out on a little kind of in some boxes? Because what you need to be doing is thinking about, well, how easy is it going to be to do these things? And what difference, what impact are they going to make? So obviously it's a no-brainer. The things that are easy to do and going to have a high impact, well, you'd make them the things you do first. You know, there's just no reason why you wouldn't, would you? They're easy and they make a big difference. The things that are perhaps difficult to do and don't make much difference, have the courage to say, well, I'm not going to do them. And sometimes that might involve a managing up conversation with someone that might go along the lines of, well, look, I've got this list of five or six things. I can't do them all really well. I'd like to propose I don't do this one and this one, because these two things, to be honest with you, they're going to take a huge amount of time and they're not really much difference. If not that, those two, which two would you choose? And so you're sort of not giving your line manager the option of saying, well, you've got to do them all. You're sort of saying, you're nudging them towards saying, well, if it's not these two, which two? And hopefully, you know, it might be I'm not going to do them, but I'm not going to do them now. At least say, can I just put those on hold for the moment? So that's those. Then the other tricky ones are the ones that maybe will make a big difference but are hard to do, or the ones that are easy to do but don't make much difference. They're the other kind of combinations, aren't they? So Amit Varma would suggest, and I think it's really good advice for middle leaders, is to say, if something's going to make a big difference but it's hard to do, you probably need to come up with a bit of a plan with some deadlines and break it down into chunks and celebrate those little successes as you go, so that it doesn't seem like this big daunting thing that you're never going to get done. It's a series of little things that you can do. And the reason you want to do that is because you know that if you get this right, you know, if you change the culture in your team, change the everyday practice in your team, it's going to make a big difference for people's outcomes. It's definitely worth doing it. And then for the other ones, the things that are easy to do but don't make that much difference, well, do one or two of them every now and again, because they're kind of quite good for the soul. They're usually things you like doing. They're usually things other people like doing. You know, we all need to do something. You know, end of the week on a Friday when I was a teacher, I can remember doing this right from when I first started. I would just have a little bit, half an hour or so, mucking about with my displays. And, you know, that was just a nice way for me just to chill out and kind of just reflect on the week. And obviously it made the room look that little bit nicer, but it was didn't make that much difference to people's outcomes, but it was really easy to do. It was quite therapeutic. Now, if I was doing that every day when I had a bit of space, instead of marking a set of books or thinking about the curriculum plan for next year, not good news. But a little bit of something you fancy every now and again never did anyone any harm, did it?
And we'll have people listening who are currently middle leaders who might just be thinking about taking that next step, might be thinking about, should I have a go for a senior leadership position, be that assistant, deputy, even going into headship? What, you know, advice would you offer to those people? How can they best prepare, if you like, to take that next step into senior leadership? And how much of a difference actually is there between middle and senior leadership?
So I think at its core, the job is exactly the same. It's about thinking about the future, getting people engaged, and then making sure there's really good delivery. The difference is you're doing it on a bigger canvas. You're doing it where you're needing to inspire and get, if you like, alignment around where you want to go with a larger group of people. So you have to think more carefully about how you achieve that. And you also have to think more carefully about how you're going to let go of things, because the more senior you get, the further you are away from the chalk phase, if you like, and the further you are away from the reason that you've been promoted to a middle leader and might be promoted to a senior leader, which is you're good at doing stuff. And that's the hardest thing, because the more senior you get, the further away you get from the satisfaction you get from achieving things yourself. You can only start to gain satisfaction really about what you see others achieving, where you've enabled that or inspired that, or, you know, whatever you've done to make those things happen. So I think you have to shift your mindset, where you've got to be prepared to empower and delegate more. You've got to be, you know, even more able to build trust in others and so on. But equally, you need to build more robust structures, because you're further away from the action. You need to build more robust structures about knowing what the quality of the delivery is. So that's about making sure you've got monitoring systems, you've got very good methodologies for triangulating what the evidence and the data is telling you about what you're doing, so that you know when you do need to kind of take a bit of a dive into the detail. Because you know, that's still something that as a senior leader you've got to be prepared to do. But and the last thing I'd say is, to help bridge that gap, if you like, what I always encourage, and you know, I did this myself, is when you're in a middle leadership role, see if there are any opportunities in your school to take on a responsibility that's not a formal one, may not even be paid, you may not even be given any time to do it, but something that just gives you the experience of working on that bigger canvas, where maybe your delivery is dependent upon people across a broader section or part of the school, in which you can start to hone those skills that I've just been talking about.
And you've alluded to it throughout the kind of the time we've been talking about the role that teaching leaders can play in supporting middle leaders in that programme. I wonder if you could just tell us a little bit more about what is it that middle leaders really get out of being part of the programme?
So the reason why I was so excited to be, you know, and this isn't a sales pitch, I genuinely think that, you know, middle leadership, when people say it's the engine room of a school, that phrase hasn't come about by accident. It's because middle leadership, you know, is at the heart of a school and can make the biggest difference. So I'm absolutely passionate about it, and I'm passionate about, in particular, the Teaching Leaders Programme itself. I suppose the things I would say is, one, the whole of the kind of curriculum and the content is focused around helping you know yourself better as a leader, know what your predispositions are, and we do a lot of work on that and self, and, you know, as part of the programme you'll get an exposure to personality predisposition tools. We do a lot of work on helping you know yourself. Secondly, we work with you to help you properly think about and understand your context and your situation. And then once you've got those bricks, if you like, in place, you can then think about, well, what do I need to do? What are the key actions I need to take? And that very much is focused around future engaged deliver, as we were just talking about. And we've got a behaviour competency framework and a technical competency framework that enables our middle leaders to do that. And we get them to do a bit of an audit at the beginning of the programme so they can work out what their own needs are and which bits, because some of the programme's personalised. There's online modules. They get a kind of core textbook, which is I've written with a couple of colleagues that everyone gets when they're on the programme. And then I suppose that the last thing I would say is that it's a program that it's not just like you turn up to some training sessions, although there is some of that. It's got a fantastic week-long immersion residential at the beginning, in which there is an experiential activity, which I can't say anything about, but, you know, people say it's an unbelievable experience when they go through it. But we have, like, world-class speakers come, so you get an exposure to some of the best thinkers in the world on leadership in education on that programme. But the thing that when I speak to fellows who've been on the programme, who are on the programme, that they probably value the most is the fact that it's a blended learning approach. And at the heart of that is they have a coach who they work with all the way through the programme that helps them make sense of both the programme, but also helps them think about their own situation, their context, how they're reacting to it. If you like, they're their partner in crime through the programme. And all of the feedback we get every time, it's the whole thing is gets amazing feedback, but in particular, people really value having that person who's not part of their school, who's independent from their world, but who's got that experience and track record of success in education, so they can empathise with their situation. They can properly coach them by asking really pertinent questions, but help them own their own future. And the approach is very much about you know, being curious, not judgmental. It's very much about helping them build their own future so they're properly empowered. And we use the growth coaching model, which is from Growth Coaching International. It's a coaching model come out of Australia, actually. It's a fabulous model, and all of our coaches are trained in that. And in fact, we train our participants, we train our fellows in that program as well, so that they can then use the coaching approach, not only in the fact that they're being coached in that way, but they can start then to use some of those coaching approaches in their work as well. So I think the fact that coaching's right at the heart of it, and that there's a focus on, okay, after 2 years, what's your impact being? We run an impact project right the way through it. In other words, children at the heart of the process as well, is why, you know, thousands of people have gone through it now, and why it's making such a difference. And there's a lot of evidence now building about the impact of the programme. So yeah, I mean, some of our middle leaders say it's transformed their leadership, which is great to hear.
Well, that's all from Andy. It's now time to hear from our panel of middle leaders, who began by telling us a little more about the nature of their roles.
My name is Sam Parrott. I work as head of music at a school in Westminster.
I'm Lily. I'm second in charge of science at a school in South London.
I'm Tori. I'm currently a key stage 5 maths coordinator, but I will be the maths curriculum leader at my school from September.
I'm Matt. I'm an assistant principal, recently promoted from head of science.
What do you enjoy most about being a middle leader in your school?
So I think since becoming a middle leader in my school, I've really enjoyed having the opportunity to manage others and really think about big projects, whole school projects, and how my team can really impact those projects. A big part of my job is developing teachers, and I've really enjoyed the challenge that's offered over the last few years.
I agree with developing others, kind of being mentors for new teachers. I really enjoy being kind of a little bit in both worlds, so you get to see what's going on more with the senior team and higher up, but also you're still kind of a really important member of the teaching team, and you get to bridge that gap, which I really enjoy doing.
For me, it's I guess all the fruits of that coming together at this time of year, because this is the time of year where I feel like everyone starts to see what they've been doing and how it's paying off in the run-up to exams, and the students are getting on board and the staff are getting the rewards.
Yeah, kind of echoing a bit of what everyone else has said about staff and student development, so the personal side of students, but also that kind of making things a bit easier for staff, and so they get more out of their job as well. Definitely a big passion for me.
And Lily, you mentioned about that kind of being both a teacher and a leader. Mm. How challenging is it to manage the relationship between those two roles in school?
So I think at the beginning it was quite hard to make that jump, going from kind of all of my really good friends that we were teaching together to then having to manage people that I was previously friends with. So I think at the beginning that was one of the challenges I faced, but over the year I've kind of come into my own, and now I quite enjoy still having the relationships with them, but also being able to go to senior team and kind of taking their ideas to senior team, and vice versa as well. So it's quite nice to still be part of both.
So let's talk about some of the other challenges, because you've talked about what you like about the role of the leader. What other challenges come with the role, would you say?
I think a really interesting challenge, but also one that I've enjoyed, is being able to think about what the senior team in my school really want from my department as a whole, and then translating that down to the staff. So whilst that's a challenge that I've enjoyed, there have been difficulties as well. Certainly when a senior team is perhaps thinking, okay, we want this huge project to happen, and I'm thinking about how we can make that happen within the time constraints perhaps that we have with our timetables and with our teachers' capabilities.
And how easy is it, if you like, to go back to the senior leaders and say, I'm not sure those plans are achievable in the time frame? Have you ever had to do that? That must be quite a challenging thing to do.
I think a big part of it is being very quick to have a vision and thinking really quickly about how this could work with your department. So the instant you're there in that meeting with the idea being presented to you, you need to be a really quick thinker and think about what your team is going to be able to manage, how your vision can relate to the senior team's vision, and how you can make something happen, and think about that very, very quickly so you can give an answer very quickly to the senior team.
I think one of my biggest challenges has been getting senior staff who are still in the department on board with initiatives that are happening in the department, and holding everyone kind of accountable to the same things. Silly things like marking books and things, making sure that just because they're on the senior team doesn't mean that their responsibilities to the department aren't met, and having those conversations, trying to assert a little bit of kind of dominance over that to make sure that's kind of happening.
So does that mean you're potentially managing people who are senior to you technically in terms of the school structure as well?
Yeah, I think that's been definitely my biggest challenge this year.
Yeah, probably experienced elements of that too. And it's a similar thing, I guess, because my biggest challenge is about dealing with different members of staff, but predominantly for me with new members of staff. So we've had a couple of cases this year of staff joining mid-year, brilliant members of staff, but because they're not there at the beginning and in your induction, they're not necessarily there for selling the vision and getting on board with all the routines at the very beginning of the year, and finding the time during the year to make sure that they are on board with that.
With that in mind, I think just the kind of, I feel like it's our job as middle leaders to provide a consistency for the pupils, no matter who is standing in that classroom or who is delivering or who is planning. It's our job to make sure that consistency is there across the team, whether they're joined mid-year or
exactly, and whether or not they're senior leadership or NQTs. I think it's just consistency is our biggest job.
I think my biggest challenge was kind of in the name middle leader, that kind of your sat in between potentially, you know, government policy and SLT, but also kind of people on the ground floor who actually quite often, you know, not that they don't care about it, but they're not, that doesn't enter their frame of mind when they go into a classroom and see, you know, up to 30 students looking at them. It's not about, you know, EBAC to them, it's about I want to transfer a level of a subject to someone. So being that person, that front man, if you like, where you're having to, if need be, take on a battle with your SLT in some cases, that can be really challenging, because sometimes you can see why something wants to go in place, but you know, your staff just don't don't feel that's necessary at the time, and you're stuck in that middle ground where I know we've got to do this, but I have to get these guys on board to try and to sell that as positively as possible. I think it started off as an experienced middle leader as a real daunting prospect, but I think by the end, dare I say, it was almost kind of relished that kind of protection. They almost became a family, your department, so it was kind of like, well, actually no one messes with the family kind of thing, so you'd go and have that battle, and I think that's certainly one of the things I miss most, is that kind of team, because you know they're there, you're there, you know, something goes wrong, it's no one's fault, but everyone kind of goes and mucks in, and I think that's definitely the biggest challenge, I think, was nurturing that, but also protecting it from external influence, I suppose.
And I'm interested in saying there about having to go into battle for your team sometimes. Mm-hmm. Does that require courage on your behalf to do that, do you feel?
Yeah, I don't want to blow my own trumpet, but certainly I think if I saw someone else doing it from a department, I definitely think that it demands a certain amount of courage, bravery, whatever you want to call it, because it's not easy, particularly as an inexperienced head of department. When I first started, for example, going into a room of, you know, 8 people, RSLT team, very experienced, leading the school, and saying, well, actually, I'm really not happy about this. And, you know, they've obviously discussed it before they bring it to you, yeah. So you really are, in some ways, going against 8 experienced people who have discussed and a lot of experience, sort of time to talk about these things, and you're kind of going in there with a, hang on a sec. So, yeah, it was tough at points.
I think just with that, going in to kind of talking to senior team and taking, you know, their ideas back in the classroom, I think that confidence is a huge thing, and going in with someone telling us that you always go with a solution, you never go in with your problem. Mm-hmm. And that's something that definitely helped the whole way through, is you have to have that confidence in yourself, even if you're not 100% sure of yourself. But going in with that confidence and going in with your solutions, not going to them with more problems.
Mm-hmm. And evidence, I find.
Yeah,
solutions and, oh, and I read this article and this is what they're doing in another school, or, and I spoke to this teacher in another department, or this is what the staff think, makes a big difference when I have those conversations, I think.
I find, alongside the evidence thing, that actually being outcomes-driven 100% of the time is also really important for middle leaders, because if we're thinking about what our outcomes are going to be with our pupils, then actually no one can argue with the fact that we have a problem and therefore a solution, if we're thinking about the outcomes in the end.
Mm-hmm. And I want to ask you now about your experience as CPD as leaders. Be interested to know the kind of CPD you've experienced as leaders, and for you, what's made the biggest difference, what's had the biggest impact in terms of your leadership ability in school.
So a couple of years ago, I had a chance to go on some CPD that was kind of transformational for me, in that it was a huge amount of coaching training and how to coach NQTs, beginner teachers, trainee teachers, and I ended up on this purely by chance with members of SLT, because I'd broken my leg and wasn't on a trip. So I happened to be in school and they had this spare place and they offered it to me. So I was really glad to go and learnt a huge amount from the author of Leveraged Leadership, Paul Bambrick Santoyo, and took this back into my school. And actually this was kind of pivotal for me in moving into middle leadership, because it set me up to be able to really mentor teachers and coach them and develop them.
It's interesting that you say it from that point of view, because probably the best CPD I've had is being coached, which then leads me on to want to coach other people. But the coaching that I've received through Teaching Leaders has made such a huge impact, because it backs up everything we do here, but also you can talk specifically about your school situation. I really value the confidentiality of it as well, that there's those times when you're thinking, oh, how do I do this? And you don't necessarily want to go to anyone in the school, because you want to go outcomes-driven and results-driven. And it's lovely to have that person that you can talk that through with, so that you can then go to school and say...
Yeah, I agree. Like, having a coach has been one of the best things, I think, for me. Just in that sometimes you just need to see someone who's done it before and just say, I've got this great idea. Is it actually a great idea? I don't want to go and appear... kind of naive and innocent and not realising what's actually going on. And it's so handy to have that person. And like, so the confidentiality is great, that you can kind of say anything and they can be a bit more like,
So it sounds like we're saying coaching really is...
Coaching is fantastic. Yeah.
We talked a bit about confidence before and the importance of being confident as middle leaders. And actually for me, with my coach, I've had a really great experience, and she has been incredibly helpful when I've felt a bit less confident about things.
Definitely.
Because I've been able to talk to her either in person or over the phone, kind of almost at any time.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been a sounding board for ideas that perhaps I'm a little more less confident
in. Yeah, you can afford to be vulnerable, and I guess that's what I mean by the confidentiality, that you can say, I'm not that sure.
And I think with the coaches as well, especially the coaches that I've had this year, through the nature of coaching, is every idea that I've come to, I've known the answer the whole time.
Yeah.
And that's helped build me up even more. So by the time we finished our conversation, we're at the point I thought we'd get to anyway, but someone's just confirmed that I was thinking the right way and I was kind of getting the best out of it. And just because if it was mentoring, that'd be slightly different because you'd have their opinions and their views. Whereas with coaching, it's very much, no, I was right. That was what I wanted to do.
I think I've been teaching almost a decade, and I think when I first started, CPD was literally everyone's in a hall. We're all listening to this one thing. And over the kind of last 8-9 years, it seems to have changed. Now you've got coaching, which is so individual. And it's all about you, your goals, where you are right now. So that just that difference, I think, in terms of how it's changed over the years is massive. Because you feel important because someone's caring about what you're doing, but also challenged because it's all down to you. So that, I'd say coach. I mean, all parts of this course, the teaching and the course we've done, I would say collectively definitely the best CPD I've ever had.
Yeah, I think everyone should have a coach.
Yeah. to pull out that one thing, I'd definitely agree with coach.
Okay. So we're at that point in the year now where we're going to have people thinking about or finding out that they're going to be a middle leader for the first time in September.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really interested, because all of you are experienced middle leaders now, what one piece of advice would you offer to anybody who's new to middle leadership taking on that role in September? Matt, perhaps we'll start with...
I would say have a dream. I know it sounds a bit cheesy, but I think one of the things I think I got very right when I first started was I had a really clear idea of what I wanted the science department at the time to end up looking like. And my dad, who was an ex-primary school head teacher, kind of said, you know, you should always envisage what you want to become and you keep aiming for that standard. So if people fall below that standard, tell them what you expect, how to get there, and you'll end up getting there. So I made a lot of mistakes, don't get me wrong, but I think one of the things I did very well when I first started was I had a really clear vision and had ideas about how to get there. And then it was about getting the team to share that vision and then them to chip in as well about how we get there. You know, let's take this path instead of this path. We end up at the same goal, that's fine. I don't mind which one we choose kind of thing. But yeah, definitely have a really clear aim.
And I'd say exactly the same. It's all about the vision. But when I was thinking back on it, I thought, why have I managed to achieve this vision? And part of it was that it was something that I relentlessly wanted to achieve. Which maybe sounds a bit silly, but I think you can sometimes set yourself visions based on, oh, this is what I should be doing, and you need to match that up with something that you know that even on those really tough days and those long days and through the difficult terms, you're still going to want to push for.
I came in to being a middle leader very, very early in my teaching career. I think I hadn't been teaching less than a year. So for me, coming in as really inexperienced, I had to kind of keep reminding myself that I'd got my job on merit and my vision and my ideas were as good as anyone else's because I had got that job. And I think that's something that you need to remember, even if you're more experienced, you've got that job on merit. Your senior team believe that you are the best person and therefore you need to fight your corner and you need to say, I'm the best person for this job. And I think reminding yourself of that constantly helps other people trust you a little. If you can trust yourself, it lets them be more willing, that makes them more willing to rely kind of on you and believe that what you're doing is the right thing.
I'd definitely agree that the vision is key. And at the beginning of when I started my role, I really thought carefully about what my vision was and then tried to think backwards from that vision and what does that vision look like broken down.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found then were, you know, all of the different parts that you need in order to make that vision happen. I definitely had everyone on board with me, but my biggest learning was that at that first moment I didn't delegate as much as I could have done.
Yeah.
And so whilst I would definitely encourage people to share their vision, engage people in their vision, I would also make them think really carefully about how they're able to use their team to their advantage and not do everything themselves.
NAHT Edge is a union and professional association aimed at teachers with leadership responsibilities. Whether you're a subject coordinator, year leader, key stage leader, early years leader, Senko, or head of department, we offer full trade union protection and high quality advice. In addition, our weekly newsletter and monthly podcast keeps you up to speed with the latest developments in education. Membership of NAHT Edge costs just £13.50 a month. Find out more by visiting www.nahtedge.org.uk. Naturally, we hope you enjoyed this special episode of the School Leadership Podcast. We'll see you next time.
Teaching. Leadership. And the latest developments in schools.